This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January the 24th, 2013, episode 579. Well, as most of you know, Horses in the Morning is now live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On Tuesday and Thursday, we bring you recorded episodes from around the Horse Radio Network. And today, we bring you a fun episode if you're into eventing at all or you're into the Rolex three-day event in Kentucky at all. This show is for you. It's episode number 232 of the Eventing Radio Show. Samantha Clark had a very special guest. Her co-host could very well be called the Queen of Rolex, as she won the event a credible four times. Kim Severson was back on the show to talk about Rolex and about her new farm and her exciting young horses and to answer listener questions about how to find and keep sponsors. And, you know, if Kim is the Queen of Rolex, and Nigel is definitely the voice of Rolex, and it was announced last week that Mike Tucker will replace him this year. Samantha caught up with him to find out where we could still see him and what memories he'll take away after 36 years of commentating at the Kentucky Horse Park. So lots of good stuff on the Eventing Radio Show that we're going to bring to you this morning. Compliments of the Horses in the Morning Show. We'll be back here tomorrow morning. You got to join in tomorrow because we're going back to the dogs tomorrow. And the entire episode is about dogs. We're going to be speaking to four different guests, and we're going to be learning all about breeds and a dog adoption and what dogs are most popular with horse people. We're going to just have a blast talking about dogs tomorrow. We really hope that you'll tune in at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. All us horse people do have the dogs we know and love and care for, so I think you'll find it a very entertaining episode tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Then Monday morning, Jennifer and I come to you live from the ADA, which is the American Equestrian Trade Association show in Philadelphia, where the wholesalers meet the retailers to bring out the new stuff for 2013. And we're going to bring you a sneak peek, a preview of some of the new things for 2013 live here on Monday morning at 9 a.m. Well, enjoy your day, everybody. Be safe. Spay, neuter, and geld. And here is the Eventing Radio Show, all about Rolex.
This is episode 232 of the Eventing Radio Show, brought to you by the Professional Riders Organization. We'd like to thank Bit of Britain. For all your eventing needs, please visit www.bitofbritain.com. I'm Samantha Clark in Lexington, Kentucky, and this week I'm thrilled to be joined by Kim Severson in Virginia. Kim, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Samantha. It's nice to, I think I've done one or two shows with you before. It's great to be back. Thank you.
Thank you. Kim, exactly where are you? Because I know you've moved. I'm not sure. Where are you? And tell us a little bit about your new farm.
I am actually just driving into my new farm right now. I am just outside of Charlottesville, on the north side of Charlottesville in Virginia. I've got a nice little 32-acre farm and five-stall barn, and they're building another five stalls, and so it'll be kind of small, but perfect size for me.
I mean, not too small, 32 acres, that's quite a lot to look after. And you've got five stalls, how many horses?
Right now I've got seven horses on the property. In the end, I'll probably end up with nine stalls and, you know, probably 15 paddocks, something like that, and so I can rotate everybody around. As you know, most people know my horses live outside, so I don't want a huge operation, but I, you know, just a nice number of horses would be good in the end.
And we've seen, you've got a Facebook page, I've seen pictures of it, it looks beautiful already. What kind of facilities do you have there?
Well, the gallop is going to be quite good in the end. It goes from kind of down the bottom of the property by the river to the top of the hill by the drive. And it's about 3/4 of a mile, so that's good. Property's quite long and narrow. And I've got a dressage arena and quite a nice little 5-stall barn with tack and feed and all that. That's quite a neat little barn. And then I have another kind of shed row barn that we're putting another 5 stalls in. So the big project, obviously, is going to be the arena in the long run. But currently I've got the jumps out in the field, and it's very good, actually. The footing's quite good outside and whatnot right now. So with the weather being a little nicer this year, I've been okay with having to be outside. So it's all been good.
And will you stay there all winter, or do you go south to Aiken or Ocala?
I will be going to Aiken the 1st of February. I usually go about that time. And I'm going to be going this year until the first Southern Pines, which is a bit shorter for me. It's only going to be about 6 weeks total. So for me, that's a bit shorter. But again, with the season we've had so far, the weather this year has been great, and also be in a hurry to get back home and to my farm.
Yeah. What prompted the move? It's taken you quite a long time to do this. Why now? And what made you do this?
I just, I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. And this particular farm I've been looking at sort of online over a couple of years, really. And it just sort of all worked out that with the financing and the price and it being available, and it just sort of all worked out. Just everything fell into place right at this time. So that's when it was meant to happen, I suppose.
Good. Well, I asked you to come on specially today because we're going to talk about Rolex a lot today. And who better? I mean, if we're going to call anyone Miss Rolex, it would be you, Kim. How many times have you ridden there?
Oh, how many times? Probably maybe about 10 times now.
Wow.
I guess.
And how many times have you won it?
4 times. One's the 3-star, and then 3 is the 4-star.
Is there anyone else who's won the 3-star and the 4-star? I think, are you the only person to have done that?
Yeah, because I was only 1 year, I believe it was only 1 year that they ran the 3-star. It was 2 years, because I believe Tiffany Loudon won it 1 year, and then I won it another year. I can't really remember. But yes, I'm probably the only person that's... Well, I don't really know. That's a fantastic question.
I certainly don't know, and I was asking you because I thought you might know, but we'll have to, one of our listeners will know.
Yeah, I mean, Karen's won it as a 4-star on Nash, and so she certainly won it before that. So I think, I'm sure there's one or two people at this point.
And of course, Winsor Medanti, who, I think he's so special in so many people's hearts. How is he now and what's he doing?
He is wonderful. He's out in the field plain dealing with his ladies. For much of his life, he was alone when he was, lived alone, I should say. When he was a young horse growing up, he spent a lot of time out alone. I think he was maybe the only horse they had, or they didn't have very many. And then the whole time he was with me, he was in a field alone. And so since his retirement, he's been out in the field with other horses and with his lady friends and whatnot. So I'm sure he's probably quite happy to be the horse he was always meant to be at this point.
It felt like you sort of owned it with him. Was it strange to go back when you returned and did it with Tipperary Lee Adnan and Paddy, who we know him as? Was that difficult almost, or does it never lose its magic? Is it just as special to go back with a different horse?
I think it's just as special. I mean, when I took Paddy the first time, I just didn't know what to expect. I was anticipating jumping one jump at a time and seeing how far we are around the course. I was pleasantly surprised. So, with each horse that you take, it's something different for each of them, really.
Yeah. And of course, it's changed so much over the years. You mentioned that you've done the 3-star and the 4-star, and it changed from long format to short format while you were there. Since 2010, we've had the huge arena now that we've all got used to. I remember I think some, I remember we used to do cross country through the arena, and they don't do that anymore. All these things that we get used to.
Yeah, I it's funny you should bring that up. I was, of course, trying to set up my office at home, and I found all these pictures of the arena when it was grass. When one of my first few times in the arena was grass, and all sorts of just interesting history with it, and how much it's grown and changed, and now with all the indoors that are there, and it's definitely quite an evolution.
Yeah. Well, one of the big changes that they announced this week was that quite a controversial one, Nigel Casserly, who we've all come to know as the voice of Rolex, will no longer be announcing there as of this year. Michael Tucker will be announcing, and I managed to catch up with Nigel earlier this week, and let's just listen to that interview. Well, Nigel, thanks so much for joining us on the Eventing Radio Show today, and on the shocking news that 2013... the voice of Rolex will be without you. It was sudden news, and I'm sort of lost for words, as I'm sure you are, because it's been 36 long years that you've sort of made Rolex your own.
Well, as Ali, my wife, said, it's been a lifetime work, and I didn't think about it that way, but it really has. I mean, 36 years is a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, it has. Rolex won't be the same without you, and we will all miss you. But that's not to say that the horse park won't ever hear your voice again. We look forward to hearing you. You're going to be voicing the driving. You will be back. We haven't lost you forever. And also, we're gonna see you at lots more events around. You know, Rolex wasn't the only event you do, and isn't the only event that you do. So tell us, if we need our Nigel Casserly fix, where can we hear you?
Well, Red Hills is the first. Rebecca Farm, where else do Richland Park. I think that's about it on the eventing end of things, because I mostly do steeplechasing these days. Our steeplechasing season starts right after Red Hills, and it runs all the way through until November.
Wonderful. Well, Red Hills is a very high-profile event, one that I'm looking forward to, getting some good runs at the CCI and a big course, getting some exciting runs under our belt. And also Richland, another big event. And Rebecca Farm, were you there? Obviously, you were there last year. That was the first time that Ian Stark designed the course. I'm hoping to be able to get there this summer.
Well, Ian did a phenomenal job last year. It was so changed, and it rode so well. It was extraordinary. I mean, both, as you say, Red Hills and Richland Park have both grown absolutely enormously over the years. And then Red Hills next year is going to be a totally new course altogether. So there's lots of exciting things happening at the bigger events.
Let's talk about that. I mean, we're both transplanted English people, but you've seen so much growth and so much change in the eventing in the US scene over the years, especially Rolex. You've seen it change from, I mean, I think I remember people talking about being a preliminary level event in the very beginning, and it's come from 1976 being the first World Championships, and now it's become... 78,
yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, They had an event in 76, and then they had the test event, which was the then Young Riders in 77, which was my first event at the Kentucky Horse Park, and it's gone on since then. And yes, I mean, it's changed unbelievably. When everybody said we go to the four-star and wouldn't have any other divisions, Janie Atkinson and I talked at length about it, about the numbers of entries, and we both concurred that you can have a world-class event with only 48 entries, but last year we had more entries than ever. So, yeah, the event has grown extraordinarily.
Let's go back. Let's revisit some of the... I mean, you've seen, as you said, from a Young Rider event to what it was last year, and, you know, even through the World Games, a truly international event. Can you think of some of your favorite memories and some of the things you thought... I mean, even actually 2 years ago when we thought it might not happen with all the water everywhere...
Yeah, well, I mean, the wonderful thing about the horse park is that we've never had to cancel. We've had pouring rain. I mean, I'll never forget one year, Torrance Watkins was on course, and you couldn't, I mean, all you could see from where we were announcing and controlled down in the dip to the first, what was then the first water, you could just see this yellow blur going along. And then that was the year that Bruce Davidson went out at the end of it. And it, the mud was just ghastly by then. And he rode the most beautiful round I think I've ever seen anybody ever ride. It was, amazing. There's been some extraordinary competition at Rolex over the years.
Yeah.
And when Rolex came on, 35 years ago now, 34 years ago, I think 81, I think Rolex came on. I mean, it's just grown and grown.
What are some of the biggest changes that have been good for it, do you think, as well as Rolex? Did you think when it went from long format to short format, was that something that you were worried that would change it for the better or for the worse?
Well, I personally have never been a short format favorite. I mean, I think it's changed the sport tremendously, and I really don't think for the better. But that again is a personal opinion. For the spectator, no, it didn't change the sport. People come and jump with wonderful horses and jump extraordinary fences, and that's what they come to see.
And for the spectator, that's something that you're pretty aware of, because not only do you do the commentating, you've done the whole sound system. People might not be aware that your job is much more than just turning up in the morning, sitting in the booth and commentating. You arrived some 2 weeks before and are responsible for stringing the whole park with the wiring and speakers, and you have to make sure that wherever you are, you can hear your voice. Is that right?
Absolutely. You were dead right on the 2 weeks coming in beforehand. We put in about 5 miles of wire into the horse park every year and take it all out, put it back in the trailer and then leave. Sound is, to run an event, you need two things. You need footing and a good sound system. And without a good sound system, an event is lost. And I certainly pride myself in the fact that there isn't anywhere on the horse park during Rolex that you cannot hear what's going on. And I know for a fact that you can go to badminton and Burley and other four stars, and you will not be in that position that you can only hear one voice at one time. There's no delays. So I do pat myself on the back for that one.
Oh, I think so. I agree. I think you should, because as someone who as someone who reports on it and relies on you, because I can't be in every single place at once. I can attest to that. I can certainly hear you all around the course. Let's talk about some of the competitors. Can you name favorites? Are you allowed to do that? Who have been some of your favorite winners or some of your favorite competitors over the years?
Not really. I mean, I love to watch good riding, and that can come from those who've been competing at the international level to those who are there for the first time. And the beauty of Rolex is that you get to see top horses, beautiful horses, being ridden well. I mean, that's the joy of our sport. You can go down to the lower level, and sometimes you say, "Ooh, I don't like that." But and things happen at Rolex that you say, "Ooh, I wish they hadn't done that." But by and large, it's been extraordinary over the years.
It's all pretty new, the news still, but and it's probably still sinking in. But what do you think when you look back on the years at Rolex? What do you think the overriding memory will be?
Oh, some of my bloopers.
Do you have them on tape, or do you remember them?
No, I know. You can remember them when you make some really bad bloopers. There's one in particular that actually I'll tell a story on. Nicholas Austin, who used to come and announce with me, we nearly all fell apart in the booth, was because he said, "And here comes Torrance Watkins on Karen O'Connor." then we had to keep announcing, which wasn't funny. But one year, 84, for the test event for Los Angeles, we had a fall, and there was a hold on course, and I was looking for filler to say, and this was in the days when we were stuck in the stripping shed on the side of the steeplechase barn, and so you could see absolutely nothing on the, of the course or whatever went on. And by the way, that went on for a very, very long time. It's only over the last few years that we've actually been able to see anything at all from control up above the steeplechase course. But so I'm looking for this filler, and I find a piece in the programs written by Irma Bombeck. And it was about volunteers, so I asked people to turn to page there, and I said, the piece is written by Irma Bombeck, the syndicated communist. So that created quite a guffaw. Neil Eyre was outside the booth, and he banged on the window. You said, what, Nigel? But there have been many, many a slip-up over the years, but that's the fun of it.
And I'm sure there are certain horses' names and riders' names that you dread when you see in the program. Is it like horse racing that you flick your eyes down and go, oh, no, I hope I might give that one to someone else?
Well, the worst I can remember was actually at Chesterland years ago. There were three fences in a row, Tyndall's Triangle, Ducky's Dock, and Legs Landing. They were three fences in the row, and at the end of the day, I had Lawrenson and Lauretian on the course at the same time. And I said to Carol Davidson after the event, I said, who the named those fences? And she said, oh, I did, Nigel. I said, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we will look forward to seeing you at the horse park for the driving trials, and I look forward to seeing you at Red Hills, and I will try and get to Montana to Rebecca. That sounds fantastic. And at Richland. And we will all miss you at Rolex, Nigel. It won't be the same. It will never be the same without you.
Well, thank you very much. And to all of those of you out there who miss me, I say thank you to you all for all your support for over the years. It's been extraordinary.
Hi, Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I am with Cassie from Bit of Britain with the Bit of Britain Product of the Week.
Well, today we're talking about the Rambo Lug line of blankets and sheets. Of course, most horse owners know that nothing on the market compares to a Rambo blanket, but this is still one of my favorite brands because it's not just a fashion or follow the crowd choice. These blankets work, and they stand up over time. I moved my horse a few months ago, and he's in a huge field with great grass in the summer and plenty of hills to run on, which I love, and of course he does too. But what I don't love is the pasture buddy who has shredded almost all my blankets and sheets one by one. But my Rambo Lug, which is already several years old, is standing up to the abuse and still looking great. Rambo's Lug design incorporates a lot of the same details as the original Rambo, including the leg arches and elasticized plastic-coated tail cord. For safety, the belly straps are attached with heavy-duty Velcro that stays in place through normal use, but can release in the case of an emergency. The 1,000 denier ballistic nylon outer shell stands up to a lot of abuse, as I can attest to, and is coated with Aquatrans waterproof breathable coating. Since my horse isn't clipped and I don't need to use a neck cover, I like the protection of the high-cut neck. The Rambo Lug is available in three weights: heavyweight with 370 grams of fill, medium weight with 200 grams of fill, and a lightweight version with no fill. And I like to use the lightweight version to layer underneath so you can create a custom feel for your horse.
And those blankets are available at bitofbritain.com. Just search for Rambo Wug, that's W-U-G, Rambo Wug, and you'll find them at bitofbritain.com.
Well, thank you to Nigel, and it's good to know that we will be able to hear him at Red Hills, so he won't be lost to us forever, but we'll miss him at Rolex. But Kim, I want to talk to you. You've got some very exciting young horses. I know that you won the five-year-old championship or the four-year-old championship last year at Fair Hill?
Yep, I won the five-year-old last year, and I had one in the four-year-old as well. So I've got a nice little group of young horses coming up. The Cooley Cross Border Horse, which is the five-year-old, won the five-year-old, is a very, very nice horse. Sort of has all the things that one would want.
Yeah.
So, you know, being that he's just 6 years old this year, he's sort of premature to make any
guesses as to what's going to happen, but I think, you know, in the very outside possibilities, he could do a two-star in the fall. But we'll just have to wait and see what he wants to do. He's quite a special horse, so I would not want to ruin him.
Where did you find him?
He came from Richard Sheen in Ireland, who I've now bought three horses from. And, you know, Richard spends a lot of time looking for horses, and he knows all the horses. He spends, you know, goes up and down Ireland 3 or 4 days a week for all day, all night, and finds some quite quality horses. And it's just a matter of what is the best quality you want as to which horse you end up with, really. If it's a movement or a mind or a jump or a, you know, what is the most important thing to you? That's sort of how it dictates, because all of his horses are quality.
Yeah. Did you go to Ireland to see him, or was he over here already?
The first trip I worked with somebody else, but I met Richard over there on my first trip, and just seeing how he works with, first of all the horses that he had, and how he works with them. He takes them out on the cross country. He lunges them over all the cross country stuff. They're just started extremely well, and by the time we get them, they've already seen pretty much everything there is to see. They've been in and out of the water and over the Liverpool, and just everything all done on the rope. So when you get on, they're really ready to go. So I just have a lot of respect for the way he brings on a horse, and very lucky to have some of his horses.
And the Cooley prefix, I've heard that before. Is that a breeding prefix? Is that something to do with Richard? What is that?
It's Richard. It's whatever, you know, horses that go, you know, you get from him, he puts the Cooley prefix onto them. They're absolutely not related. So it's just to know that they come from his barn.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And what about the four-year-old?
The four-year-old is called Cooley Streetwise. And he was broke in March when I brought him over in, I can't remember, maybe July. Very lovely, lovely, straightforward, easy horse. He's by Oboz quality, which as a lot of jumper lines, a lot of his were at the Olympics this year. Few Adventures have his jumping line. He's a very nice horse that's sort of so powerful behind right now that he overpowers the front end. So we're working on him controlling his body. he's just got a lot of power and not a lot of control right now. So he'll be doing some training levels this year.
Oh, so exciting. It must be nice after, because I know you spent a couple of years working, you know, so hard with Nina at the top levels, but now to come back and start all over again with your horses, it must be a real thrill.
It is. It's great. I've gotten on the other side of the program. I've gotten experience, you know, what it's like to be on the other side of the table and go to the Olympics and do that kind of thing. And I took a break. And so I'm really, really enjoying what I'm doing right now. And, being a selector this year, new to that, that's helping me to understand both sides of the table a little bit more too. And it's just things are going really well, and it's been a really good sort of circle for me in the last couple of years. So I'm enjoying my life.
Good. Being a selector, will that take much of your time this year, seeing as we don't have a championship, there's no World Games, no Olympics? Will you be able to concentrate on your horses, or does it take much time out of your life?
You know, we don't have a major championship this year, but we have a lot of selection trials this year. I mean, we went over the list the other day, and there's probably, I'm going to guess, about 15 on there of selection trials that we have, and whenever we have a rider going to a selection trial, the selector has to go. You're going to have to work it out. You know, obviously, we're all going to go to Rolex, and then the next weekend is Badminton, and kind of a lot of people are busy that weekend, so I might have to take that weekend myself to go to Badminton to watch whomever we have there. So it's things like that. I mean, my schedule can work around it, and I have young horses, so it's not, you know, imperative that I get to, you know, any major shows this year. So it'll be a little bit different, but good nonetheless.
And you say, you know, I mean, I think people will listen to you go, oh, well, I might have to go to badminton. And that does, I mean, sort of, it sounds like funny. But also, I mean, we should, it's an unpaid job, am I right? No one's sort of paying you to do this. You do this out of the goodness of your heart. And we're paying you for, you know, you do have a skill and a talent, which we're lucky to be able to use as, you know, I say the royal we for the US team. And you're taking time, as you say, time away from your horses, time away from your new barn, time away from your business. So it's not a small commitment that you make. Also, jumping way ahead, these jolly nice horses that you have, it's not inconceivable that in a few years' time, how long is the commitment that you make to be a selector? What happens if you want to be on the team?
We have, you know, sort of a few of us going into this, you know, kind of said, well, on the outside possibility, I might have a horse. And if I do, then I get replaced by, you know, somebody else, whoever the alternate selectors are. You know, if it looks like I were to have a horse and want to put an application in. You know, but that's sort of like everything had to go absolutely perfectly. And it might happen that way. And at which time I'll come off the list and put an application in to be on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's 3 years away. So you just don't know how things are going to go. I want to do what I can for the U.S. for right now. And whether it's to be on the selector side of it or as a rider side of it, I hopefully could still go either way. So either way, I'd like to be helpful.
Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting going to Rolex as a selector. Do you think that Rolex will be stronger this year because there is no championship, that no one will be saving themselves, that they'll all be going out to win Rolex?
I think, you know, you don't go to Rolex not to win and not to go and be competitive. I mean, I personally have found in the past that if I try to do that, I'm not, you know, you have to have some sort of gumption to get up and go. So I think everybody's going to try to win as hard as they normally would. I don't think there's a big difference between whether or not you're trying to make a selection or not. You're going to try to win no matter what.
Yeah, and I think also I meant, you know, like last year, for example, you know, Boyd didn't take Neville, Sinead didn't take Tate because they were all saving them for the summer. But you know, that won't be the case this year. Hopefully, I mean, everyone will go.
Yeah, I think absolutely everybody will go for sure. I mean, you know, when it comes to a championship year, you do your best to make the best decisions you can for your selection and for your horse and, you know, for all these things. So certainly takes a little weight off this year without having a major championship to also try to prepare for. Generally, you know, they're in the summertime anyway, so it makes it very, very difficult to work your schedule around. So, you know, I think yeah, we'll get a good picture this year of what we're going to have for the next few years.
Ooh, exciting. Well, Rolex, you know, we sort of touched on that too. Rolex is changing. We've got the arenas, which makes room for the reining. That'll be new. That's something new that's developed over the last few years. We've got the cross-country club. We've got the tailgating, which is immensely popular, so much fun. And I caught up with Christina Gray to ask her about all the stuff that we can expect this year. Well, Christina, thank you so much for joining us on the Eventing Radio Show. And you are the director of competition at Rolex, not only at Rolex, actually, there's a lot of other events too. So you're a busy girl. And especially now as we get closer, you're sending out tweets. We are less than 100 days out from Rolex. Time flies.
It definitely does fly when you're having fun. And, you know, it's one of those things that just kind of makes us jump the gun and get everything done. So we're very excited that we're coming up on it and hoping that it'll get a little warmer out here now.
Yeah, it's freezing. When do the entries open for Rolex?
The entries open February 26th, so we're very excited to start anticipating who's going to be coming this year. And, of course, it's always exciting when you kind of check up with everybody at the annual meetings and see who they're planning on bringing this year. So, and it's very exciting with having David being the new coach of the team and everything that he's doing. It should be really an exciting, special year for his first year as the coach.
And you're pretty good about, well, you're very good about posting things on the Rolex website, which we'll put a link on our homepage. Will you, once the entry's open, do you post them immediately, or is there a time lag?
I would say the time lag is definitely on when we receive the entries. It's we get a couple on opening day, but I would say that most of the time the riders kind of wait, and some of them are superstitious and think, oh, I don't want to go until I'm completely qualified. And so it's definitely, it depends on the riders and when they send them in, but we try and post them as soon as we get them. So.
Oh, good. Oh, because I love checking. And then another thing that I love that you do is the featured riders. How do you pick them?
You know, it's really kind of a group decision here. I try and kind of weigh some of the other riders and grooms and just kind of follow who is, you know, people are following and wanting to hear from. And then I also try and change it where we have someone from the West Coast, someone from the East Coast, and we try and get somebody who's going to be a first-time rider. And it's really just an exciting opportunity for riders to get to tell their story. And this year we're kind of doing something exciting where we're opening it up to owners and to just kind of get their perspective on what it's like to be an owner coming to Rolex. So we're really excited to kind of tell that story because I think it's an untold great story that people who can't necessarily ride at Rolex can kind of enjoy the opportunity of still coming to Rolex in a different capacity.
Yeah. And do we know, can you tell us who they are yet?
We're still trying to line up the last few, so we should. The owners, we're still lining up. For the riders, it's going to be Jenny Brannigan, Sinead Halperin, and Will Coleman this year. So it should be an exciting group that, you know, some first-timers, some veterans, and then some, you know, just kind of great people that we love to follow, so.
Definitely. And actually all good writers and good speakers. That was a good decision.
Yeah, so we hope, you know. It's always interesting to read them and be like, do you mind if I edit these a little bit? But most of them are always eloquent writers and, you know, do a really great job. And it's really fun to see their personality come out in what they're writing and gives the general public an idea to kind of fall in love with the writers before they come here to compete.
Well, what's changed since 2010 has been the reigning cup, the Western, you know, there's been a lot more Wranglers and cowboy boots around Rolex since we've had the Alltech Indoor Arena. Tell us a little bit about that, how that evolved, and we've even got some eventers involved in it, which is fun, I think, to see them spinning around in that indoor.
It definitely is. It is something that we started actually in 2011, coming off of the World Equestrian Games. We decided we have this great new fantastic arena here and that we needed to somehow invite the Rolex stadium, you know, participants over there to see what an amazing facility it is. So we started it, and I have to say I'm a, you know, born and bred feel eventer, and it's just incredible the electricity that you get in that arena. And we've convinced a couple of eventers to go over and do it to just kind of try it out. And Karen has been great. She's done it both years, and she just loves it. And it's an amazing thing. And it's great to see the eventers and the reigners talking to each other, and to see, you know, Pete Kyle instructing, you know, Karen on how to, you know, do the different spins and the slides. So it's a great opportunity to go and see them doing something different.
Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing Anki doing, you know, the dressage rider doing the reining at the WEG, and she was pretty good at it. There's definitely a good crossover. I mean, the only thing I worry about is when I'm covering Rolex is there's just so much to see and to do. I mean, between the trade stands and the Rolex, and then now you have a concert on the Saturday night too, is that right?
We did a concert on Saturday afternoon last year, and we're hoping to bring that back again this year. We haven't firmed it up definitely, but it's one of those things that it was such a great opportunity. And I know I was actually speaking with a couple of riders over the weekend, and they definitely are a big supporter of us doing a concert and different things to kind of get the outside public into the event. So we're hoping to bring that back this year, but it's not for sure yet. But we'll definitely be the first to know if we do. So.
Okay, well, you're a California girl, so I know you're suffering a bit with the cold, but what is hugely popular, I've learned, having lived in Kentucky for my sins, is the tailgating. That's been, you know, an immense success. And I love, you know, when I'm running back and forth, the people are having so much fun and put a real effort into decorating their cars and dressing up and bringing all sorts of picnics. And I have accepted a cocktail or two as I've run past. That's been terrific. That was a brainwave. Who thought of that? And what can we expect this year?
You know, it was kind of a group decision from us. We just were looking for a new thing to do, and it was really targeted to get the local Lexington and Bluegrass State out to the event. And what's amazing is that we have people that are flying in from Montana and renting trucks and going out there and tailgating. And it wasn't exactly what we had in mind, but it's great. We are going to be doing a competition for the best tailgate spot again. And we do have a few left. Those definitely sold at an incredible rate this year, but we still have some standard spaces available that are for sale. But it was just a great way to try and involve a new group, and it really just makes it a fun environment for people that are not necessarily wanting to go and track all over the cross country, but they still can. Gives them a good spot and kind of puts them on one side of the course, and they can easily walk, and they get a jumbotron. And we were very excited that Land Rover decided to come back as a sponsor of the tailgate, because it really just matches right in with their lines that they do with their company, and it was great to have them jump on board with it.
It's a funny dynamic, because you get the people who sort of dress up and bring out, you know, the go all out for the picnic and for the tailgate and to win the prize, and then you get the people who are trying to cram as many people in their car as you can to get the most money for the, you know, for bang for their money for their ticket, because you pay one price for the car, don't you? Is that right?
You pay one price and it gets your car in with six people, actually. So it is limited a little bit, so you can't have people cramming 30 people into a vehicle. So
did you change that? Because I feel like the first year maybe you could get away with that.
I think the first year we were a little lenient on it just to try and encourage people to do it. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, we definitely have it down to a science now, and you know, it includes six admission tickets, and you can also purchase additional ones, obviously, to just come on and join your friends. So it's, you know, it's a great way to come out and enjoy the event and on a cross country day, which is always so much fun.
Good. And so Land Rover will be back. They'll be doing their obstacle course, which always attracts a huge crowd.
Yes, they'll be doing their test drive again on, it's right on the corner of Nina Bonney and Mark's Lane, and it's just, it's a wonderful different thing to do at the event, and I was lucky enough to get to do it last year, because normally I'm running around like a crazy person, so they let me do it before. I was probably the first one before it was completed, so it was a great thing to do, and there are amazing cars and, you know, and vehicles, and we just are lucky to have them involved with the event.
And tell us, as I didn't get a chance to see it last year, but you have the Kentucky Club, which is right in the middle of the cross country.
Yeah, last year we added the Kentucky Club, which is a great way to come to the event, especially if, you know, you don't want to be walking around to see the entire course. We do have TVs in there, so you're able to see the live feed that's coming from the cross country. And it also overlooks the infield for those of you that have been here, so you get to see a really good area of the course and the horses galloping by a couple times. And, you know, it's just a great location. And it also puts you in the middle of the course, so if you decide to wander out and go and see the start and then come back and you want a break and you want to be able to grab a drink or grab a snack, it gives you that opportunity to have a kind of a safe haven and get out of the elements if it's hot or if it's raining. It's just a great way to enjoy cross-country day with a little extra break in the middle.
But that's like flying business class. That's pretty expensive.
It really isn't. It's pretty affordable. I mean, for the day, it is $200, but that includes all your drinks and all of your food for the whole day. And it, you know, gives you a seat and gives you a table, and then you get access to the TV feed. So, I mean, it's really, if you're going to come and you want to enjoy just cross country day, it's the way to come and enjoy it.
Okay. Should we talk about packets and packages and how to get in and all that?
Yeah, for the most part, everything is staying the same. We're going to have general admission parking is over at the campground again, and then we do offer a preferred parking, which if you're wanting to come to the event, it's $125, and it allows you to get parking over in the main parking lot when you enter the facility, and it kind of cuts your walking time down before you get on to the park, which is kind of a great thing if you're planning on traipsing all over the place. It's a great way to enjoy it.
Especially with shopping.
Especially with shopping.
But yes. You do have shuttles.
We do have shuttles. We also that shuttle you from, you know, different areas of the park. And there's great shopping down in the trade fair. Lots of new vendors this year. And also in the sponsor village, it should be a really great year to go and get your horse needs fixed and your other just general things that you're looking at. You know, some really great vendors coming back this year. And all of that can be found on our website.
Okay. From next year, badminton will move 2 weeks away. It's always been a week away. Do you anticipate that will bring in even more English riders and international competitors?
I really hope it does. I think it's going to make it a lot easier for the riders that do come over. I always, you know, feel bad for any of the riders that come over and they get to miss out on our great celebration party that we have on Sunday night after the competition because they're jetting away to get on a red-eye flight to get back over to badminton. So it should really help them to get to at least enjoy the event a little bit more and take their time here in Kentucky because I feel like they're always jetting in and then jetting out and really don't get to experience the full event. So it should be great for them to get to enjoy that. And it really should help our American calendar in the sense that we're not going to be having to move. So it's a really great thing that it just kind of solidifies when the four stars are going to be, which then allows you to solidify where the three star events are going to run and where all the other national competitions are. So it should really help keep us from having to shift our calendar every couple of years. So
yeah,
it's a great thing.
And God forbid I should jinx the horse part, but luckily we do seem to be able to run in any sort of weather, so we should be all right.
We are lucky that way, and I mean, knock on wood, you know. There are definitely some times when, you know, a day plus or minus, and you look at the ducks that are underwater and you say, how did we run cross country 3 days ago? Or, sure. You know, how are we going to run it in 5 days? And, you know, we've just been incredibly lucky and would like to keep that trend going.
We spoke about badminton, and of course, Andrew Nicholson and William Fox Pitt have both made their intentions clear that they will be coming to Rolex this year. Those are their plans. And should Andrew Nicholson win Rolex this spring, they'll both be going to badminton to try and win the Triple Slam, which has been so good, I think, for eventing as a whole.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's made a little more excitement this year for the Rolex Grand Slam, which is great for Rolex Watch, who's an incredible, great supporter of the equestrian community. And it's, you know, a great thing for the riders, too. I mean, they're always kind of competing against everybody else, but now it's just kind of down to the two of them. And, you know, we'll really see if Andrew's able to come here and get the job done and then continue on and give William a real shot at, you know, a run for his money. So it should be an exciting spring, that's for sure, for eventing.
Yeah. And it must be, you know, the icing on the cake when the third event happens to be here in Kentucky. What will happen? Will Rolex, do you know if Rolex will continue to be a sponsor after next year?
For the
U.S. Kentucky event?
Yes, no. Rolex is definitely on board to remain the title sponsor of the Kentucky 3-day event, and we're, you know, extremely excited. They've been an incredible sponsor for us since 1981, and it's just a great opportunity for them, and it's been a great opportunity for us. I mean, it's amazing. I don't know any other sporting event that's, you know, known by their title sponsor's name. So, I mean, it's just pretty incredible that they're that supportive of the equestrian sport and, you know, the Kentucky 3-day event and the USEF.
So how long is their commitment for?
Their commitment's for another 4 years.
Fantastic.
That's so, I mean, they're, you know, really backing us as they have in the for the past, you know, over 30 years. It's incredible.
Yeah, good. Well, that is good news. Can we just talk about Nigel quickly? I think, you know, he will be missed. And obviously that was a board decision, but you must have been in on the board meeting when that decision was made. I mean, I think you must have known that he, you know, it would cause huge controversy. And can you shed any light on that?
You know, not really. It was just a board decision that was, you know, needed to be made, and it was looking forward at the future of the event. And I think, you know, Nigel has done a great job over the years here, and he will be, you know, definitely missed. But we also look forward to having a great, you know, year with Michael Tucker, and I think he'll bring a lot to the event. And we look forward to, you know, what the event will be in the future. We really are looking forward to this year, and we're hoping in the next month we'll have a pretty big announcement, and we'll be giving you a call to inform you on what's going on. But otherwise, I would suggest to get tickets soon. We're already filling up quite a bit on Sunday, so if you want to make sure that you have a great reserved seat to see show jumping, I would definitely purchase it today from our website. Tailgating is filling up, so it would be great to make sure if that's something you're interested in, you get your spot. But otherwise, you know, keep checking out our website, and we should have some exciting news in the next month. And we look forward to starting the featured riders next week.
Ooh,
so
good.
We'll be able to follow those stories, and it will be, you know, before we know it, it'll be here.
Thank God. What if you do sell out on Sunday? I know those are really popular seats. Will there be live streaming, or will it be on? It'll be on television later. But is there any way to watch it live, or will the Jumbotrons be on TV? Or
the Jumbotrons will be on TV again, streaming the feed, and then we do have it live on the USEF network. But if you're definitely interested in coming and being here and want to make sure you have a great spot, then I would definitely, you know, look at getting a ticket today, at least for the Sunday seating.
Well, thank heavens again for the USEF and their live streaming. They do such a great service. And thank you, Christina, for telling us all about what we can look forward to this year. It sounds exciting as always. And we'll look forward to hearing from you in about a month with another exciting announcement. And we'll keep checking the website for our featured riders, because that's another exciting thing. And stay warm, and I'm sure I'll see you out at the horse park again soon.
All right. We look forward to having everyone in a couple months.
Well, thank you to Christina. I know that she's suffering a little bit with the... She's not used to the Kentucky winters yet, and she may have to get used to that. Lindsay Steinberg left us a message on Facebook with quite a good question. How does a rider go about getting and keeping sponsors, especially if you're not a high-profile rider? And is that something that you found now that you're not doing four stars all the time and on the teams, and you've dropped back a level? Is that something? Have you kept your sponsors, or is that something that you have to keep going after?
At this point, I've been very fortunate and kept my sponsors and actually increased my sponsorships, the first number one most important thing is you endorse the things that you really like and that you really want to endorse. Borrego, way back when was one of my very first sponsors. And the reason I got them is because it was a product that I looked for high and low, and finally found it. And to this day, I think the company is great, and the saddles are great, and all the tack and everything. So, you know, that's been good. So you have to definitely make sure that you back up what you're getting sponsored by. And I think you have to be, you know, you obviously have to be good to your sponsors. You have to give them a shout out when you can. You have to do for them what you can. And it's hard sometimes to do that. And I know, you know, I try as hard as I can to do it, but there's always more I could do. So I think, you know, just doing the best you can for them and doing the most you can for them is very important.
What do you think about social media? I think it's a double-edged sword. I think in these days you can do, like you said, you can do more for them, but I think you can sometimes do too much. And I think maybe the old adage, there's no such thing as bad publicity, doesn't ring true anymore, because there is such a thing as bad publicity in these days.
You're absolutely right. I agree with that. I mean, I get tired of reading about the same person all the time, or I get tired of seeing, you know, it's very hard, and you want to keep people interested, and you want to keep them up to date with what's going on with you, and you want to, you know, for sponsorships, you want to represent them well. So whatever it is you're doing, you're still representing your sponsors, even if it's only doing the training level championships or, you know, the 5-year-old young horse stuff. I'm still representing my sponsors, so I have to, you know, do well by them. But definitely I think there can be such a thing as overindulgence in advertising.
Yeah. What what's the best way to approach sponsors? Is it good to go and visit people, you know, go and visit your local feed company face to face, or write letters, or what would you suggest?
I think you have to go armed with your resume, and, you know, don't be shy about what that is. I know I'm my own worst advertiser. And one of the reasons I've been successful is Liz, my groom, does a lot of my coordination with my sponsors, because she's not afraid to give them all of my accolades. So I think you have to be willing to put yourself out there and say what you can offer, and you know, just go from there. But still, number one thing is to definitely you've got to be willing to, you know, really willing to endorse what you're getting and not just what is given to you for free.
Well, Thank you so much, Kim. I think that's been very useful and brilliant. And we will look forward to seeing you at Rolex just as a selector this year, but hopefully in years to come, we'll see you once again competing. How is Paddy doing, by the way? I didn't ask about him.
He is doing really, really well. A guy by the name of Lewis has been riding him and doing a really good job showing him. Paddy's been showing Lewis the ropes, and he's a student of Laney Askers, and he'll be out and about starting in Florida some more. And he's doing very well and very happy.
Lucky Paddy. I wish I was in Florida too. What fun. Well, great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again. Like I said, we look forward to seeing you out and about soon. I can't wait to see your coolie horses out and about because I haven't seen them in person yet. So I'm looking forward to that. We will put all the links to Rolex and, of course, to Kim's website and her Facebook page on our homepage. So you can click there for those links. A huge thank you to our guests this week, to Nigel Cassidy and to Christina Gray, but especially to you, to my co-host Kim Severson. Thank you, Kim. And as always, thank you for listening. And please come back next week and enjoy your eventing.
Well, thank you.